things better. We have a history of the civil rights movement. We have a history of women's suffrage movement. We have a history of doing the right things, of fighting two incredible world wars where the nature of the world was changed. We have a history of doing the right thing over and over again. We are one of the most generous countries in the world. There is a substantial portion of our GDP that's given out as aid to other countries. We accept over 1 million immigrants into this country. So anybody who tells me that America is a racist country because we don't allow anybody to come in the doors, that is an absolute hoo-ha. 1 million people are admitted to this country every year. Several million people are admitted into this year through student visas, through company transfers. I work for a company that it's a multinational organization. In the 50 or 60 people that are in the home office, just the home office, we probably have 20 countries represented. And it's incredible when you think about that kind of diversity. We all get along. Do we have different perspectives? Absolutely. But we get along. And we understand that certain things, you know, there are certain topics that are sensitive, and we kind of figure out, you know, what's sensitive and what's not. But the goal that we have is to find common ground. And that is the goal of my show, especially in 2020. I'm going to be sharing things with you that you may not disagree. I mean, you may not agree with. You may disagree wholeheartedly. I encourage you to call into the show and engage me in respectful conversation, because that is really what I want to do. I want to change your mind. I'll be honest with you. When you call in and you have a different opinion than me, my goal is to help you see things my way. But at the end of the conversation, the goal that I have is that we may agree to disagree, but we each had an opportunity to make our points. And that's really so important. You know, I don't want to engage in this name-calling. You know, I've been called every name under the sun. I'm 60 years old. Believe me, I've been around the block a couple of times. Sticks and stones, they say, won't break my bones, but names will never harm me. Well, you know, I respond just as badly as the other man when I'm provoked. And fighting words, you know, are words that provoke. So I try very hard to not use fighting words when I'm engaging people in a debate. At the same time, I expect the same thing. I'm kind of like the John Wayne character. I want to respect everyone, and I do respect everyone. I'm an ex-military man, so it is second nature for me to call everyone sir. And I mean it. I'm not being patronizing. Every other man I respect. Doesn't matter if they have 100 times more money than me or 100th of the amount of money that I have. Every man deserves respect. Every woman deserves respect. I expect the same thing in return. And that is sometimes where I have a problem. If someone's going to be disrespectful to me, it's hard to not respond, believe me. As I get older, I think I get more patient. But there are times that definitely my dandruff comes up, as it were. One of the things that made me really angry in these last couple of weeks, to the point where, I mean, you know, I'm not a cursing man. I don't like to use foul language. It's just not my thing. I really believe the biblical injunction that says, let no corrupt word come out of your mouth except those which impart grace upon the listeners. Very beautiful passage in the Bible, and I try to live by that. But when I heard about the attacks against my fellow Christians and churches, and against my fellow Jewish brothers, not just in this country, but overseas. And then I hear about attacks on Christians by Muslims in Africa. You know, it makes me really, really upset. And it makes me want to say things that are hurtful and possibly even a little bit racist. And I have to really, I have to restrain myself. Because I have met many people that are Muslims that are wonderful people that have the same thirst for perfecting themselves through God as I do. I've also met the other kind. I've engaged the other kind in battle, and it wasn't pleasant. But when Americans attack other Americans simply because they're wearing clothing that identifies them as members of the Jewish faith, it makes me very, very defensive. For those of you that are new to the show, I will tell you, I have a ghetto pass, and I every once in a while, I will flash it. And I guess I do that just to let people know that, you know, I'm not some right-wing conservative because, you know, I was raised in the suburbs. I come from the ghettos. I was raised in Ocean Hill, Brownsville, in Brooklyn. Most of my childhood years were spent in Ocean Hill, Brownsville. It is not a very nice part of New York. At least now it kind of is. It's becoming gentrified. But at the time, it certainly was not. I had more than my fair share of encounters with bullies. I mean, if you can imagine, here I am. Listen to how I speak. Imagine a little kid speaking the way I do in an inner city neighborhood surrounded by people, mostly people of color. It was a Black and Puerto Rican neighborhood, I'll tell you. And to be a kid who speaks like a white kid, who wears a white shirt and a tie to school every day, who's thin, bookish, and nerdish, I was the perfect target until I became good at fighting. And so I had this thing about bullies. It definitely triggers me when I see bullies. And these events that have been happening in New York has definitely triggered me. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that because I hope that at the end of this conversation, you'll have an appreciation for people that may not look like you, may not talk like you. You know what? Everyone is entitled to their opinions about others. Just because someone doesn't look like you or talk like you doesn't give you the right to see them as less than you are or even not human. We'll be right back to be part of the celebration. I'm sorry. I think for those of you that are not on Facebook, you probably heard a lot of quiet, a lot of silence. I had potted the wrong thing up. I really need my producer to come back and help me. As I was mentioning, that song is called Hava Nagila. It is a traditional Jewish song. And in the previous segment, I was talking about the attacks that that Jews, not just in the U.S., but Jews worldwide have been subject to. And it's not just Jews. It's also people of faith. For those of you who don't know, Christians are have been persecuted, heavily persecuted in the Middle East to the point where many of them have left. There are still Christians in Syria, and they're fighting for their homelands. They were decimated by ISIS, but they fought. And they are discriminated against in those countries. And now in Nigeria, they're being selectively targeted for extermination. So it is disconcerting to me to see people of faith being attacked. What do we do as people of faith? Well, I think as Americans, one of the obvious things that people are doing is, and it's unfortunate, but it's the reality, is people are arming themselves. It is just an absolute shame that you cannot go to church and close your eyes and worship God and be oblivious to everything else because there's always that concern that there could be someone coming into the church. Now, some larger churches have put in security. Some of it has been very discreet, kind of quiet, because they don't want to alarm the parishioners. Others have been a little bit more visible because they want the parishioners to know that there is security so they can relax at church. Some of the other smaller churches just don't have that. And so, unfortunately, have to rely on church members who happen to have carry licenses to provide kind of informal security. Am I telling you that it's time to go to the local gun shop and get a gun, so that way you can protect yourself against people who are trying to do, you know, harm to the faithful? Absolutely not. But I see something that I find very disturbing when people of faith are being attacked. When I look at an Ashkenazi, of course the name escapes me. When I see a Jewish person dressed in the traditional 17th century Jewish garb, there's a whole reason why they dress that way. I see a people that are trying to set themselves apart so that they can devote themselves to God. I admire that. I admire that greatly. I wear a kippah or a yarmulke during the month of May, for the entire month. It is my way of showing my devotion to God and of honoring my Jewish ancestry. I'm a practicing Christian, but I'm ethnically Jewish, amongst other things. when it comes to my ethnicity, I am an absolute mess. But I'm proud of every portion of my ethnicity. It is, you know, it is what I am. I had nothing to do with it. I created my own, you know, ethnic diversity with my children. But it is part of what I am and who I am that I wish to honor. And I will be honest with you, when I wear that little hat, it helps me focus on being a little extra kind, a little bit more considerate. Just today on the way here, I was in a hurry. I didn't want to miss my train. When the doors opened up, there was a lady that was getting out of the train, and I was getting out. Ordinarily, I would let her out first because I'm an old man and, you know, ladies first. But today, I kind of streamed out before she could get to the door. I felt very bad. But when I wear my kippah or my yarmulke, I will not do that. Because I know that when I wear the kippah, I am representing a faith. And so I must carry myself, I must comport myself better than I would otherwise. And so when I see my Jewish brothers with a kippah or with a traditional Orthodox garb, I know that they are focusing themselves. It infuriates me when I see people that target them simply because they are what they are. Now, I don't know off the top of my head if Orthodox Jews are allowed to carry weapons. I sure hope it doesn't come to that where these guys have to basically defend themselves. But I am definitely going to encourage you, my friends, to learn a little bit of self-defense. Some of the attacks that I've seen were entirely avoidable. When you're walking down the street, when I'm walking down my street and I got my kippah on, believe you me, I have an extra layer of kind of awareness about me, because I am aware that I live in a society and I work in a city that is not as open-minded as I wish it were. They're open-minded on some things, but on other things, if they don't agree with it, they're vicious people, some of them. And I'm aware that someone could very well attack me simply because I've got that silly little hat on. And I mean that in a joking way. I respect the kippah. And so if you're an Orthodox Jew and you're walking around in all your garb, you got to be aware of your surroundings, especially if you're an older guy and a bunch of young punks are walking past you. Because they've got this stupid game called knockout where they will walk right past you. One of them will turn around and punch you as hard as they can in the back of your head to knock you out. And that's the name of the game, called knockout. People have been killed because of that. Because they've been punched so hard that when they hit the ground, they suffer an injury that proves fatal. Now, I'm sure these young punks thought that it was funny, you know, to beat up on an old Jew. And when they're caught, afterwards they say, oh, they were sorry. You know, it was a game, they didn't think it would happen. Yeah, that's what happens all the time. People don't think about the consequences. When you lay hands on someone else, there is always the potential for more damage than you anticipated. So I myself, when engaged in a hostile situation, I'm very mindful of that. I do know how to defend myself because I've been doing so for many years. I'm trained to defend myself. I know that I have to practice incredible restraint because if I'm attacked, I could very well kill someone and it would be justified, but I don't want to carry that on my conscience, not at this point in my life. Maybe when I was a young man and I did what I did, that's another story. But at this point in my life, the last thing I want to do is take another person's life. But we need to defend ourselves. We need to be aware of what's going on around us. We can't just let things go. And so if you're listening to me and you are a person of faith, my words to you is, don't be afraid. Don't stop going to church. Don't stop going outside of your home. Don't stop doing the things that you do. Don't stop being who you are because you're afraid. Because when you do that, evil has won. And that is what evil wants to do. Evil wants to constrain us, restrain us, and limit us. And I'm not just talking about the devil kind of evil. I'm talking about other kinds of evil in and you know exactly what I'm talking about. We cannot be constrained, restrained, and limited. We must be bold. We must be, and sometimes we must be fearless. And other times, we must be willing to accept the consequences of decisions that we make. And so if you're going to go out in Orthodox wear, understand that someone may attack you. Be ready to defend yourself. Because there are many people in this world that do not have that ability to defend themselves. They are at the mercy of others. These little villagers in places of Nigeria, when the bad guys come in and when Boko Haram comes into their villages to attack them, there is nothing, practically nothing that they can do because they have nothing to fight with. Because they have nothing. And they have to rely on their feet. They have to flee. They have to hope and pray that they can get through this attack. I hope that we can raise the awareness of these and do something about it. I'm hoping that religious leaders from the on the Islamic side will say, this is not who we are as Muslims. We have always welcomed other people of the faith, especially those of the book, i.e. Christians and Jews. We have lived with them. We have prospered with them. It is time that we allow them to live in peace, because the alternative is war. I got a call coming in. I've got to take a break, so I'm going to try to put you on hold, and we'll be right back. You're listening to WARA, America in the Now, AM 1320. Okay. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman, and that is Fiddler on the Roof, If I Were a Rich Man. And if I'm not mistaken, this is my friend and nemesis, Marcus Myrick. Marcus, Happy New Year, my brother.
Happy New Year to you. Happy birthday to you. Let's give the people what they want. Say hello to all of my fans that are listening on Henry's show, because you have gotten enough of what Henry wants to talk about. Let's talk about the stuff that moves the needle.
Let's talk about the stuff.
Let's talk about the great Republican Party. And I am on board, Henry. I am on board.
You know, I'm going to use the words that were used by the general in the movie Star Wars when the Imperial fleet shows up and he yells, "It's a trap!"
I am on board. Why hear from the witnesses? Why deal with actual facts? Let's just cover it up.
So you're thinking that this the recent events in Iran is a play on Wag the Dog?
No, I wouldn't even go that far. I think they are connected, but not so much as in to distract people from what's going on with impeachment.
You've triggered somebody. There's another call. I'm going to have to tell that other call to hold until you're done, because I have picked up other calls and I've totally blown it. So please continue.
Yeah. Again, let's not make any mistakes. Soleimani, definitely responsible for the death of lots of Americans over the years. The man is not without blood on his hands.
And that we agree.
However, if you look at the events, all of a sudden, the president taking phone calls from Putin in Mar-a-Lago. Are people finding out? No. How do we find out? Moscow found out, told us. Oh, yeah, by the way, we had conversations with it. All of this is boiled down to say that I don't think that anybody who really voted for this man and really had the perspective of you as him being the best of the two candidates really thought that this is where we would be 3 years into his presidency.
By the way, I see it. There's another call that wants to come in. I apologize that I can't get you on while Marcus is speaking. I will get to you as soon as he's done. And if you want to talk to Marcus, I have to figure out how to put two callers on the air. But just call back as soon as Marcus is done, because I would like to respond to this.
Right.
There are things. Go ahead.
It is just a thing with this president where as someone who did not vote for him, but it was willing to say, let's give him a shot because he could be good. You can look at it and say, whatever the strategy is, if there is one, it doesn't appear to be coherent, okay? And more likely is that he doesn't have one. He's someone who lives in the moment. and is very transactional in his dealings.
Oh,
his business, in his business life, and in when it comes to the way he's governed. It's very transactional, at least on the surface. Okay.
Allow me to respond. There's a couple of things I wanted to respond, and then I'll give you a chance to retort as well. First of all, someone who's a builder cannot be impulsive, because when you're impulsive, you lose hundreds of millions of dollars. So I don't think that's entirely accurate. Trump has built many things, buildings. I'm a project manager. I'm a software project manager. And I know that when things go wrong, things can go very wrong. So you have to have not a transactional mentality, but you have to have a project-oriented mentality. So I don't think that that's entirely accurate, at least when it comes to Trump as the businessman. Now, has he had failures in business dealings? Absolutely. But he's also been, you know, pretty successful, you might say. So let me put that to the side for a moment. The other part is there are things that go on in Washington that you nor I or most people in the world will ever be able to find out. I think there are glimmers of things. There is no such thing as someone who's pure and is in politics. I think politics attracts the kinds of people that are either rabid idealists or are power-hungry SOBs. I mean, that's male and female. I think where Trump fits in is he is not a classical politician who goes to create consensus, to kind of go along, to get along kind of mentality. I mean, Biden said it one time, and you know what? I agreed with him. He said, I used to work with such and such. I forget the name. He was a segregationist. But I had legislation I wanted to pass. I needed his support. And so I was willing to work with him. Trump is not that kind of person. There are certain things that he's not willing to compromise and negotiate on. I'm not here to defend him, even though I do him every week. But I feel that in terms of what we, those of us who did vote for him, those of us who have given him a mandate to do the things that he does, he is doing what we want him to do. He is appointing conservative judges on the bench. And he's actually done a very good job with that. His legacy will endure long after he's gone. He has engaged the enemy, and he has done so in a way that gives people pause. He has not been someone who has pacified people. And in many ways, he has been, people will call him erratic, crazy, call it whatever. But that has instilled incredible fear, because they don't know what the hell, pardon my friends, this guy is going to do if they do something. You know, he took out a combatant who was in Iraq to make trouble. And I, as a veteran, you know, I know about war. I know about conflict. That's not a decision that we should go in lightly. And Trump is a hesitant warrior, but when he goes in whole hog. That's what I respect about the man. So there are many things I don't like about him, and I will say that. I hold my nose sometimes when he opens his mouth and says things. I go, I cringe. But he's doing the things that I, as a voter, a conservative voter, he has established the capital of Israel in Jerusalem. I know other presidents have talked about it. No one has done it. He has drawn a red line in the Middle East, and it's pretty clear. You cross that red line, there are going to be consequences. He is cutting legislation. The Federal Register is much smaller than it was before, because he's trying to remove hindrances to business. The economy is booming. He has advocated for people of color. In my opinion, he's done all the things that I want a president to do. Your response?
Well, I mean, that's one person's cup of tea, right? And here's what I will say to
my opinion, correct.
Right. Here's what I would say to my conservative friend. Could you have had all of that without the drama? Because you could have had Kasich. I'd just like to point that out. Kasich would have been your guy, and you would have gotten everything that you talked about, minus the scandal. Now, I'll give the president this. If this was a TV show, it would be the highest rated TV show ever. and it would be can't miss TV because you definitely don't know what's going to happen next.
Absolutely.
We can all agree on that point. If you disagree that if this was a TV show, you wouldn't tune in, you're lying to yourself, you would definitely be there. Henry, I'm going to hang up and let you get to these other callers. But again, people, remember, it's all ending in November.
Don't hold on.
Remember that.
Don't go away yet. Let's switch gears just a little bit, if we could. I agree. I look forward to, you know, I always look forward to speaking with you, Marcus, because there are some things I just don't agree with. But I must say, sometimes you trigger people in a good way. Sometimes, you know, I have to like go online or afterwards kind of defend myself after you're online. I had a long, an hour conversation with some people because of a phone call that I had. And then you and I went back and forth, which is a good thing. So please do continue calling in. But tell me about this. We got 2020. What's going on in your personal life? You know, I really enjoyed the book. I'm done. I'm looking for the next one. When are you going to have that next book out?
Well, I don't know. There's just so much material that keeps popping up. You know, we've had to push back the deadlines on the book. Because, again, I think more importantly is I'm focusing my efforts on how do we bring people together. And not necessarily, you know, through political discussion. And for everyone listening and think, Henry and I have known each other for years. And while he's wrong on a lot of things, the things that we have in common outweigh the things that we disagree on.
And, you know, I'll argue that point.
He's someone that I would vouch for, and I'm personally happy to see all of his success. So the book will come out again in 2020. It will be lengthier, but right now there's just so much that I've got to pour out onto the pages that the release date has got to get pushed back. So we shall see what happens. I'm hoping that it'll get ready and be released this year, but when, we'll have to see.
So if people haven't gotten your first book, what is it called and how can they get it?
Well, the first book, it is available on Amazon.com. You search for Devotional Thoughts, God in Everyday Life. And again, it's not a book that's going to be like heavy on theology. It's just more practicality. You know, I'd like to call it, you know, finding God just in truly your everyday life. You know, the small things. That matter and how you can see how God moves in your life and the lessons that he teaches you, whether that's through people that you interact with on your job, you know, while you're driving, your kids, you know, all of those things that we sometimes take for granted. So again, go ahead and pick it up if you want to. It's not anything for me to get rich or anything like that. It's literally, if it's a blessing to you, that's enough for me.
Excellent. Couple of bucks. Worth it. I've read it twice. It actually made me kind of think about how I want to project myself. I don't know how long it's going to last, Marcus, but at least today I'm being less less choleric. Take care and God bless, brother.
All right.
That was Marcus Myrick, right, Everybody. I always enjoy him calling the show. He is a great guy. I don't agree with him. I will tell you this. We go back and forth, and sometimes it gets a little hot. But I respect his opinion. I don't agree with him. I have to say that. But I can see his perspective, and we always end on a positive note because that's the way it should be. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. Indeed, they have. Oh, indeed. This is from the movie Fiddler on the Roof. I think this is a 1976 version. For those of you who don't really know a lot about Jewish traditions and about kind of how is it that so many Jews came to America, if you watch this movie, you'll kind of understand a lot about why kind of Jews are the way they are in America, what some of their stories are. I mean, one of my family members, through marriage, his family came from Russia in the 1890s, and it was a direct result of pogroms, of the persecution of Jews in Russia, where they felt it was better for them to leave than to stay. And they'd been there for over 1,000 years, but it became, the living situation became intolerable, and so they left. And it is a shame that they had to do that. But our country has been enriched with that wave of immigrants that came to this country, not just in the 1890s, but also in the 1930s, during the Nazification of Germany, where many Jews fled for their lives. And the reason why maybe there are, you know, as many Jews in Israel is because many Jews were able to escape the extinction. When Hitler called it the final solution, he wasn't playing with words, ladies and gentlemen. He meant that the solution to the Jewish problem, which is what they called it in Europe, was to exterminate the Jews. And he was successful. He exterminated over 6 million Jews, and that was in the 1930s. But people of the Jewish faith have been persecuted since the very beginning. They have been a stubborn people. The Roman Empire removed them from the land of Israel, and for hundreds of years they were not able to return. The city of Jerusalem was renamed, I forget the name of the Jerusalem. So the Jerusalem that you see today is actually a Roman city, because the Jewish city was destroyed by the Romans. And so when the Jews fled the diaspora, they settled, looking for a place where they could worship in peace. And they prospered many times. But there have been these waves of persecution. And, you know, and here we are again. Here we are again. So what do you do? Oh, my goodness. It is difficult to decide, you know, what to do. And I was talking about this earlier, you know, what to do. 2020 is a time when people make resolutions. And I hope that one of the resolutions that my radio listeners and my watchers on Facebook will make is to be a little bit more understanding of someone who's different than you. And that's something, you know what, I have had a bit of a journey these last several months when it comes to that issue. For those of you who've listened to the show, you know that in many ways I'm almost rabidly anti-illegal immigration. I don't believe that it is in our country's interest to open our borders and allow people to come in unchecked. We are a nation of laws, and we need a process under which people are allowed to come to this country, which we have. For those who bypass the process, I don't believe that they should be rewarded. At the same time, believe me, and this is difficult for me to say, but I have to acknowledge this, and I hope you do as well. There are many reasons why people come to this country. Some of it is economic. Some of it is opportunity, right? Economic opportunity. Some people come here to lie, cheat, and steal, really. They're gang members. They're drug dealers. They're criminals. They're coming here to extend their criminal enterprise. I don't believe that's the majority. I don't even believe that that's a significant minority. I do believe that they're a tiny minority. Others come because of other reasons, because they're able to, or because they're fleeing poverty, or they're fleeing violent societies. The concern that I have with that is when you have a large population of people that transfer from one part of the world to the other, what habits do they bring with them? They need to be given the opportunity to blend in, to assimilate, as it were, to become American. That's not a bad thing. You've heard me talk on the radio. I speak Spanish, de lo más bien. And in my current job, tengo la oportunidad de hablar español con mucha frecuencia. Y por eso, gracias a Dios, estoy hablando mejor que antes. For those of you who don't know what I'm saying, I'm just showing you that I speak Spanish pretty well. I speak it with an accent, true, because, you know, I mean, I lived in Puerto Rico for only 4 years. But I am not anti-Hispanic. I am, you know, Hispanic, as it were. And so the difference that I have when it comes to this is that I don't insist that the person across the counter speak in my language, right, or my ancestors' language. When I go to the store, I don't say, hablas español, or I insist that they speak in Spanish to me, or I insist that they provide a Spanish-speaking clerk to tend to my wishes. I don't like it when I call customer service number and they say, oprime dos para español. I don't like it. I believe that that leads to the balkanization of our country. Our country has done very well through the process of assimilating people. And when I see the model in Europe where you have these huge numbers of immigrants that establish these footholds in these communities, those communities become a reflection of the communities that they left behind. And unfortunately, it's not the best of what they left behind. It's the worst. That is my concern. We have had ghettos. We have had ethnic ghettos forever and a day, since probably the 1700s, with successive waves of people that came to this country. And I know that there are many of you that will say, well, yeah, but everybody was white. Not true, because the Southwest was not all white. I've got a call. I'm going to go ahead and take that call. Hello, you are on WARA AM 1320, America in the Now. What's your first name? Oh, looks like I lost you. I'm so sorry. Please call me back. That number is 508-222-1320. Again, that number is 508-222-1320. As I was mentioning earlier, let's see, I lost my train of thought when it comes to assimilation. I'm glad that I've had the opportunity to spend time in a country different than mine. But you know what? America is not just one monolithic cream-colored or vanilla colored and flavored country. When you go to different parts of the country, each part of the country does have a different kind of feel and culture. Go to South Florida and see the culture there, which I definitely don't like. I'm an older guy. I don't like that culture. I know that there's lots of people that are retired in South Florida. They like the weather and they have their little, old people's enclaves. It's not my culture. Then there's Central Florida. Then there's the South. Then there's the West. Then I've got another call. Let me see if I can get that call. Hello, this is Henry on WARA AM 1320. What's your first name? Oh, they hung up again. Oh, boy. All right. I'm sorry. Keep trying. It's not you. It's probably me. So just hang in there. Call me back. 508-222-1320. But try to call me quickly because we're coming up on the break, and I've been told I better adhere to my breaks. So the point I'm trying to make is there is nothing wrong with you being proud of your Italian heritage. Did you know that some of the most valiant fighters during World War II were Japanese Americans, who not only fought the Japanese, Imperial Japanese, but also fought the Nazis in Germany? African Americans fought valiantly. Indians, American Indians, valiant fighters. People of Mexican descent, one generation removed from La Hacienda, who spoke with heavy accents, would be right alongside their white brothers from Arkansas and fought. You can be proud, and there were second generation, or you might even say first generation Americans whose parents fled Germany or grandparents came from Germany. They could speak German and went to Germany to fight the Nazis. Why? Because it wasn't an issue of race. It was an issue of ideology. And these people were Americans. They were German Americans. They were Italian Americans. They were Jewish Americans. They were African Americans. But they were Americans, Mexican Americans. They were Americans fighting for an ideal. Some of them would eat bangers and mash when they got home to their families. Others would eat tortillas con habichuelas, or frijoles, actually, right? Others would eat rigatoni. Others would have lox, a bagel with lox and cream cheese, or have a roast beef sandwich, no cheese. But when it came time to come together as a nation, there was no doubt where their allegiances lied and what they were fighting for. Did they have differences? Was there some conflict? Was there some tensions because of racial differences? Absolutely. That was the case then. That's the case now. But for me, what's important is that we need to give people the opportunity to assimilate. I do not want a system of government that coddles people from other countries, that makes them dependent and keeps them ignorant and does not help them assimilate. By having these language options on the phones, by providing speakers of other languages and government offices, providing ballots in other languages, that to me is an absolute travesty. This is America. In America, we speak English. You can speak Spanish in your home if you want to. You can speak Yiddish. You can speak Croat. You can speak whatever language you want to. You can eat whatever food you want to. That's perfectly fine. But when it comes time to vote, that ballot should be in English. You should be able to go out and conduct your business in English, even if it's horribly accented English. My mother, who's 82 years old, lived in America for many years before she retired to Puerto Rico. She speaks horrible English. And us kids tease her about it. We're kind of actually pretty mean about that. But she speaks it and she communicates in English because she had to. If you make it easier for people to not learn and to not assimilate, they will not. And we will have enclaves of people that are dependent on government, and that is what the left wants. And that is not doing a service to immigrants, especially to Hispanics. We can be proud of our heritage. I am. We can be proud of our foods. We can be proud of who we are. But first things first, we are Americans. We'll be right back. You're listening to WARA AM 1320 in Attleboro, Massachusetts. Matchmaker, make me still very young. Please take your time. Oh, dear. You are listening. You are listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. I've had this this Jewish shtick, as it were, so far in the first hour. I was talking about ethnicity, about Judaism, about protection, about being Latino, about assimilation. My goodness, we've covered quite a bit in that hour. I'm bringing this all up because I think it's important that as the new year rolls in, we take a different look at things. We do things differently. You know, a year goes by pretty fast, and the older you get, I'll tell you, it's very true. The older you get, the quicker time seems to fly by. And so, you know, here I am, 60 years old. It's hard for me to believe that 40 years ago, you know, I was in the military. I got a call. Let me see if I can get that call. I'll try it again. Okay, let's try this one more time. Oh, dear. Let's see. Hello, this is, I don't know if it's someone just messing with me. But if someone keeps calling, I'll keep trying to put you on the air. Let's see. Oh, dear. 553. I don't know who's calling. Anyway, none of us have unlimited time on this earth. None of us have 300 years to spend. You're going to waste some of your time, absolutely. But don't waste all of your time. It's one of the issues that I kind of chastised my son, and I've challenged him to think differently in 2020. I've told him, I want to prepare you to live on your own. I want to make sure that when I close my eyes for the last time on this earth, that I can go on to meet my maker knowing that you can take care of yourself, that you can change a flat tire, that you can cook a 5-course meal, that you can protect yourself, that you can take charge, that you can engage people in conversation. These are not things that require, you know, a Superman. This is not something that is a secret. but it is a process that you have to learn. I was incredibly shy in my youth, incredibly shy, with especially with women. I wish I knew now I wish I knew then what I know now about women, although maybe that's a good thing that I didn't know, because who knows? But the ability to engage, you know, a young woman in conversation, the ability to steer a conversation in a group, the ability to ingratiate yourself, to make people feel good about themselves, to solicit feedback, the ability to gain friends and influence people. It's a talent. It's acquired. Some people are born with it. Others, the rest of us, we have to learn. We have to learn how to do this. And so what are you doing in 2020? How are you making your life better for yourself, for your family, for your children? There's this article on the Epoch Times. I love this newspaper. Every week, there are a couple of, I get a couple of magazines at home. Some of them I don't really read. Some of them I just kind of flip through, like my sailing magazines. I look at the pictures. I read some of the articles, but not, you know, cover to cover. Then I am a member of the NRA. Whether I choose to carry or not, it's really a personal decision. And whether I choose to carry or not, really, it's not the issue. But I get the magazine. I've been a member for many years. And I read that thing from cover to cover. I read the editorials. I read the advertisements. I read the articles. I mean, I find that stuff fascinating. And it's helped me that even though, you know, I'm not a gun person, I'm still able to carry on a conversation with people who do, you know, own lots of guns. I know the differences between revolvers, semi-automatics, automatics, rapid fires. I mean, I know the different conversations about different guns. And it's because, you know, of the magazine articles that I read. It makes people think that I really know a lot about things that I don't really know that much. It's just I read. That's my great talent. I read. This article in the Epoch Times from December 26 talks about, you know, it says tricks to making healthier New Year's resolutions that stick. This is from Carol Harrell, and it says finding the fortitude to follow through on an important lifestyle change is easier with better goals. One of the things that people do is, you know, they set up these New Year's resolutions that unfortunately are unattainable, or that you just can't follow through for the rest of the year. When I owned a gym, this is a long time ago, I owned a gym, you know, with weights and trainers and all that other stuff in Virginia. And for us, the perfect customer was the one who would come into the gym the first 2 weeks of the new year. They take a tour. They loved, you know, the fact that we had all these modern machines. We had saunas. We had, you know, restroom facilities. We had different weights, cardio areas. I mean, it was a very nice gym. I lost my shirt, but that's another story. That's a story for another day. But these people would come in. They take a tour. They were excited. We'd set them up with a trainer, with a 1 year program. They would sign up for 2 years. They'd pay cash. They'd come in maybe one time, and we'd never see them again. Perfect customer. We needed customers like that, because if everyone that signed up came in, the gym would be full. And usually, if you go to the gym now in January, the gyms are packed with people. But all you have to do is be patient, because come February and March, the numbers of people going to the gym are going to thin substantially. So take heed. You can work out at home and wait till, you know, late February or March to go to the gym, and it will be empty. Well, all the people will have already given up. But how to be successful when you make a New Year's resolution? Well, you know, it's not that difficult. Carol Hill says in her article, it's actually quite extensive, but I can only paraphrase. It says, make your goals measurable. Rather than make a resolution to eat healthier in the New Year, turn this into something measurable according to where you stand in relation to this goal. For instance, if you want to be healthier by consuming less meat, consider framing your New Year's resolution to go meatless for lunch. Set a deadline. Reassess your, you know, healthier eating goal. If you find that you're having a difficult time achieving the goal, just tweak it. On the other hand, you can tweak your goal to increase the challenge. So for example, maybe you'll only purchase meat that is USDA certified. Now, I'm a vegetarian. I did have turkey for New Year's. It was delicious. My wife made it, but I'm back to my meatless regimen. You know, am I a meat Nazi? Absolutely not. You know, if you enjoy meat, good. My wife, you know, eats meat. Good for her. I just choose not to eat meat for religious reasons and also for personal health reasons. And if you look at a picture of me, you know, for a 60-year-old guy, I look pretty good. And it's because, partly it's because of the diet that I have. So if you're going to say, I'm going to lose weight, how do you lose weight? Well, maybe I'm going to lose weight by cutting the portions that I eat. You can do that very easily. Just cut the portions a little bit. Maybe just add a little bit more exercise to your diet. You know what I do? When I take the train, I don't take the first carriage on the train. I take the last carriage. That forces me to walk all the way back to the carriage. May not be a lot, but it's actually, you know, some of these trains, it's, you know, it's quite a long walk. I try my best to walk around the office. I get up several times a day. I stretch. I walk around. I don't just make a phone call to someone in the office. I walk over to them. If your goal is to have 10,000 steps a day, that's how you do it. Go for a walk during lunch. Walk around in the office. Go up and down the stairs instead of taking the escalator if you work in an office, you know, with elevators or escalators. This is like at South Station, they have escalators. I take the stairs rather than the escalators. So that's how you can kind of achieve your goals. Another thing that you can do is, you know, make your goals realistic. Instead of saying, I'm going to lose 25 pounds in the next 3 weeks, you know, that's unrealistic. But you can lose half a pound a month for the next 12 months, for the next 24 months. If you set a goal of losing half a pound a month for the next 24 months, that's 12 pounds. That's significant. That's probably 2 inches off your waistline. Now, if you're morbidly obese, you have to get more creative. But remember, if you set yourself with a half a pound loss and you exercise, you're going to build some muscle mass. So you're actually trading fat for muscle mass. So you may not lose as much weight, but your body is going to be proportioned. I have a friend who's really gone on a big health shtick, and I'm impressed. I mean, he looks great. Good job, Tim, if you're listening. He looks fantastic. I said, man, you look great, you scoundrel. You make the rest of us look bad. He thought that was funny. And make a resolution to add something. So let's say you're going to add it. You know, I'm going to add an additional vegetable to my dinners. I'm going to try a different food, a different fruit every month. I'm going to, and this is what I did. I'm a charitable giver. My wife and I, we do give to charities. And so I made the commitment that I'm not going to like increase my charitable giving by 50% because I can't. I'll be broke. But I can tweak it up $25, you know. And that's what I've done. I've got two charities that I already give to. I decided I'm going to tweak that by increasing it by $25. So it's going to cost me $50 extra a month, but that's $25 a paycheck for me, more or less, that I can handle. You know, if I need to save $50 in something else, you know, I'll find something that I can if it's a problem. And if I need to, I can always ratchet back. I can make it $25 instead of $50. Create mini goals. It's really important. Incorporate rewards, right? So if you achieve a certain milestone, reward yourself. Don't go crazy and say, I'm going to take, you know, a trip around Europe if I lose 3 pounds. But, you know, do something for yourself. If you've lost a lot of weight, reward yourself by going out to dinner. You know, if you want to have that steak, have that steak. If you want to have that dessert, you know, enjoy that dessert. Having that dessert every week is going to kill you. But if you have that dessert once every 2 months, once every 3 months, or once, you know, whatever, a year, because you indulge, so be it. I always tell people, for those of you who drink, make a commitment to drink less. I really feel that alcohol is just so bad for people. There are very few people that I know that have maybe one drink a week or something, or maybe a quarter cup a day. Many people do it to excess, drink too much. It's just not good for you guys. That much alcohol, you know, our bodies were not made to ingest alcohol. Maybe an occasional alcoholic beverage, that's up to you. I choose not to drink. An occasional sweet, again, that's a problem that I have. I'm a chocolate lover and I eat way too much chocolate. I've decided I need to cut my chocolate, so I'm monitoring my chocolate consumption and I'm trying to cut down quite a bit. Make resolutions, you know, one at a time. Don't have 25 things that you're going to do. Have a couple of things. And then accept that some things you're going to do well, better at, some things you're not going to do as well. And if you have that kind of that thinking, you're going to achieve, you know, you may not achieve 100% of your goals. You may achieve 85% of your goals. You may exceed your goals. But what's important is that you set a goal and you strive to achieve it. Because if you don't set goals, then, you know, you're not going to achieve anything if you don't have goals. That's true with everything in life. We'll be right back. WARA AM 1320. The man who taught me that song is my father. Interesting. He was raised in Puerto Rico, penniless, has a blazing total of 4 years of education, and yet he is probably one of the most intelligent, cultured men that I know. Beautiful, huh? That is from the Rodgers and Hammerstein's movie Oklahoma, 1955. That was sung by Gordon McRae. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And as I was mentioning, whenever I talk about my family, it seems like I always get a little bit emotional. I really am grateful for the upbringing that my parents have provided. You know, were they perfect parents? Absolutely not. Were they good parents? Absolutely. And they continue being so. And I'm grateful for the time that they've given me. They actually surprised me. They surprised me for my birthday. So last Saturday, I was not feeling very well. And I go to church on Saturdays. I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. And so that was a day where I told my wife, I don't want to go to church. I just want to stay at home. This was 2 weeks ago, actually, two Sabbaths ago. And so my wife was a little bit concerned, and she kept saying, well, I hope you feel better. And she was acting a little strange. I just couldn't figure out why. My wife is not a very good liar. But she tells me, oh, go ahead and get dressed, take a shower, shave. And I said, why? You know, I'm home. I'm not feeling well. And she goes, well, we're going to have visitors. And I said, what? You're having people over today? She goes, well, the pastor is coming to pray for you. And I said, Pastor Nalito is coming here to pray for me? Please, am I dying? Is there something that I should know that you know? And she goes, no. I thought, maybe she knows something that I don't know. Why does he want to come pray for me? He just wants to come and visit. I said, okay, fine. I'll take a shower. Why don't you shave? I said, fine, I'll shave. So I went ahead and got ready, dressed. Within an hour of me getting ready, I hear someone come in downstairs, and someone's speaking with an accent. But I thought, that doesn't sound like a Filipino accent. That's a Spanish accent. And then I recognize my dad's voice and my mother's voice as they're speaking to Daisy downstairs, in English, of course. And so I open the door, and sure enough, there they are. My dad is 93, my mother's 81. So, you know, for them to travel, to be on a plane for 4 hours, that's quite a feat. I was so happy. I spent the entire week with them. I was on vacation. I spent a week watching Westerns with my dad. Laurel and Hardy. We went to restaurants to eat. I cooked food. Daisy cooked for them. We told them, you know, while you're here, we want to take care of you. We want to love you. We want to shower you. We had a party. They were at the party. They saw our friends. They saw how much we're loved by so many people, and I'm very grateful. Our New Year's party, we invited 50 people, and 50 people showed up. Had we invited 100 people, 100 people would have shown up. Had we invited more, probably even more people, but I think 50 was all that we could handle at the time, and I think actually more than 50 showed up. It was a wonderful time. Then my wife made it into a surprise birthday party, which made me very uncomfortable. I don't like parties. I don't like birthday parties especially. But I must admit, I enjoyed it. I just didn't, you know, I don't like getting gifts from people. I can't explain. I don't like it. It makes me feel like I'm imposing on people, and I don't like that. I love to give gifts. I just don't like to receive them. Go figure. But I was very, very grateful. And I think all of these things that have happened during the holiday season has kind of given me a different perspective. For those of you who are regular listeners, you probably hear it. I'm not changing my point of view. I'm not changing who I am and how I think. But I think I would rather try to convince people than to polarize people. But I'm still a polarizing figure. Don't get me wrong. You know, I was reading another article that I found very good. It talks about, you know, anger. It says, when you're embroiled in an argument, you're eager to prove your point. But if your approach only escalates the conflict, people will become resistant to your message. I think that's a lot of that is what's happening in this country. Everybody's kind of, we're solidifying our stances. We're kind of digging in. And we're telling the other side, if you don't like it, you can go fly a kite. Actually, stronger words. People are engaging, you know, in fisticuffs and making threats of bodily harm to others simply because they disagree with them. Somehow or another, we need to figure out a way to kind of ratchet this back. Otherwise, we will have, you know, fighting on the streets. And I don't want to do that. I don't want that. I don't want to pick fights with people. I don't want to fight people. I don't want to have to defend myself because someone is attacking me. You know, I really hope that people will respect the fact that I'm an older man who has his opinions. I also hope that I can engage people in polite conversation, and even if it becomes a little heated. It says, it's tempting to believe that your ability to convince others comes primarily from what you say or how forcefully you say it. But according to Dr. Christian Conti, the key lies in how well you listen. Conti is a licensed counselor who specializes in anger management. His techniques quickly cool conflict in the most volatile of environments. He works in maximum security prisons across the United States, teaching inmates and staff how to be more effective with their communication by keeping their anger under control. He calls this method yield theory. It's a way to lead with compassion and conscious education to get around people's defensiveness so you can actually be heard. The goal of a yield theory is rational discussion and problem solving. Conti says it just takes three steps to get there: listening, validating, and exploring options. By walking these steps effectively requires practice and self-control. For example, when someone confronts you in anger, it can provoke you to retaliate with the same angry vibe. Yield theory is an opportunity to turn these moments of tension into an understanding that people often become angry because they don't feel like they're being heard. Very, very true. I know that I certainly have a certain trigger. And that trigger is, if I'm talking and someone interrupts me, to me it feels like they're not listening. They're just kind of either waiting for their turn to talk, or they just can't wait for their turn, so they're going to talk on top of me. That for me is one of my triggers. It's been a challenge because it's an easy trigger. But my wife and I have learned that we really need to give each other the opportunity to express themselves, even if it takes a while. Now, I'm more of a talker than my wife is, and so if I express myself, I just need a little bit more time. But I also have to sit and listen very carefully to what my wife is saying, to rephrase what she's saying, and to try to do so dispassionately, because we've had episodes where that hasn't been the case, and it's just not pretty when we both start yelling at each other. It's just not productive. And, you know, we've had several discussions where we've said, you know what, this is not productive for us. Let's figure out another way. And we have. Our marriage is a working marriage. It's not a perfect marriage, but it works pretty well for us. And I'm very grateful. We'll be right back. You're listening to America in the Now with your host, Henry Roman. What is he trying to tell you tonight? That is from The Color Purple. God is trying to tell you something. What is God trying to tell you now? It's one of my favorite songs. I got to turn it off, though. Otherwise, I'm going to start blubbering on the air, and yeah, it's not a good thing. 2020. What are you going to do with your life? How are you going to make your personal life better? During the show, I've talked a little bit about setting goals. I've talked about taking stock of who you are, taking stock of kind of how you look at yourself, how you interact with others, kind of who and how you define yourself. Many of us define ourselves by what we do. Some of us define ourselves by what we look like. some of us define ourselves with kind of a mix. So as those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis, you know that that I kind of weave politics and religion and personal kind of, you know, empowerment philosophy into this eclectic mix that for some people it works and some people it just doesn't work. I have made enemies because of my politics. There are people that do not wish to be friends with me because of my politics. And it's unfortunate that that they've made that decision. I respect it. If because of my politics, you know, they decide that they don't want to be friends with me, then perhaps there's not a lot that joins us. But as you can hear from my dear friend Marcus, he and I, we go at it, you know, anytime he calls, chances are we're going to disagree with each other, and we're going to try to convince each other, and we're going to, you know, try to use each other's points against the other. I mean, I enjoy debating with him, but I care about him very much. You know, he has other interests besides, you know, political stuff, and it's kind of nice to be able to, to correspond with him on things that are not specifically religion. But religion is important. And I really feel that part of the reason why we, as Americans, that there's something that we're losing, some of our cohesion, is because we no longer go to church like we used to. Some parts of the country, there's still avid churchgoers. New England, believe me, it's almost like a wasteland, a desert when it comes to churchgoers. Many of the churches are filled with older people. The only churches that, in my experience, that I see that are experiencing growth, it's always the ethnic churches. It's always the new arrivals that come to this country that kind of carry their religious traditions with them to the new world, and that's a good thing. And usually they have, you know, they're young, they have children. And so the churches are very vibrant. My wife and I travel to different churches almost every week, and we've gone to many different churches, and it's very, really amazing the dynamics and the energies of some of what I call the ethnic churches versus some of the other kind of more, you know, mainstream churches. I like them all. They each have something to offer. But when I go into the what I call the more traditional churches that are filled with kind of older people, my message, my mannerisms are definitely very different than they would be if I went to an ethnic church where there's a lot of young people, or I feel like I have to be more energetic, more exuberant, as it were. Jokingly, my wife says I channel my inner Latino when I go into the Spanish churches. Am I being a hypocrite? Absolutely not. It's part of who I am. None of us are the same way. You know, if you're the same person with everyone, then you're probably someone with a very flat personality. I'm different with different people. That's just the way it is. I mean, and I think it's part of my training, where I've trained myself to try to be, make people feel comfortable with who I am. There's this publication that I'd love to read, just a portion of it. It comes from Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College, in Illinois, if I'm not mistaken, they're in Illinois. They are an organization, Hillsdale, Michigan, pardon me, not Illinois. Close enough, I guess, for those of us in Massachusetts. They accept no federal money. It is a college where every student has to take at least one semester they take one semester where they delve into the Constitution. And everyone that comes out of this college has an understanding of government and politics. There's a young lady that is a graduate of Hillsdale College, and she's on Breitbart. She's with, I forget the name of the talk show host now. Oh, my dear. It'll come to me later on. But she's a regular guest on the show, and she's obviously very young. She sounds like she's probably in her, maybe mid-20s at the most. But she's eloquent. She's well-spoken. The points that she makes are very well thought out. And I must say, I give kudos to the college that educated her. Because when I hear people like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to go negative here for a few minutes. When I hear people like AOC and the things that she says, I think to myself, how is it that she can say these things? Does she really mean it, or is she just trying to do it for, dramatic purposes? Or does she really believe the tripe that she regurgitates? There are days I don't understand how someone who was raised in this country can have those kinds of thoughts. Really, honestly and truly, I just don't know how. And usually what I think is, this is another Colin Kaepernick moment where he's just being controversial in order to sell himself, to have mind share so that, controversial figures attracts attention. Okay, I get that part. But I would think that Congress people are not elected to be showboaters. They're elected to form and promote legislation for the betterment of the country, for the improvement of the country, not to make positioning statements that are just, in my opinion, asinine. So this article talks about Hillsdale College. It says, Hillsdale College just had a dedication ceremony for its new Christ Chapel on October 3rd during a two-day gala to celebrate the college's 175th anniversary. This is the following is an excerpt from the dedication address. And if you're really interested in looking at, you know, watching the video and hearing more about Hillsdale College, just go to fourpillars.hillsdale.edu. And Hillsdale is spelled H-I-L-L-S-D-A-L-E, hillsdale.edu. Anyway, it says, this is a very special occasion, the 175th anniversary of Hillsdale and the dedication of Christ Chapel. This beautiful chapel is the culmination of years of generosity, planning, and hard work. And the end result is at once stunning and glorious. The chapel's enduring beauty highlights the transcendence, the sovereignty, and the grace of God. It truly illustrates how our architectural design can reflect the character of God and evoke a sense of reverence for His majesty. Oh, man, absolutely. Everyone involved in the financing, planning, and construction of this chapel should be rightly proud. It is a magnificent accomplishment, but we've gathered here today not just to admire this beautiful chapel. We've gathered here to dedicate it. The word dedicate in this context means to set apart and to consecrate a deity or to a sacred purpose. To dedicate this chapel appropriately, then it is worthwhile to reflect on the purposes for which we are setting apart this sacred place on a college campus. The primary purpose of a chapel is to provide a place where a man can enter the presence of God. It provides, and a woman as well, it provides sanctuary in which man can withdraw from the chaos of our world and seek a sacred stillness. For as Elijah learned on Mount Horeb, God so often comes to us not in the storms, not in the earthquakes or fires of life, but in stillness, in a gentle whisper. Accordingly, men and women have long sought respite from the noise and commotion of daily life, where they can be still and know that He is God, where they can seek an inner calm and a transcendent place. Beautiful chapels such as this one provide that sacred space for stillness, a place for an encounter with the divine. As the architect of this chapel has written, when you enter a church, it is as if you are entering through a gateway from the profane toward the sacred. It is difficult to overstate the significance of the role that this chapel will play in the life of Hillsdale College. What a beautiful, beautiful opening statement. And it goes on for, you know, six more pages. But it is beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. I get this magazine every week. I am a supporter of Hillsdale College. I support them financially. I think what they do is important, preparing young minds. And so, you know, I put my money where my mouth is. And that's really important. We'll be right back with our last segment. You're listening to WARA AM 1320. That's from the movie Sister Act 2. It's the finale with Lauryn Hill. Really beautiful movie. I can't say I like Whoopi Goldberg. Actually, I don't like her at all. But I liked her when she was the nun in Sister Act. I like Sister Act 1 and I like Sister Act 2. I don't know if there was a Sister Act 3. We are very fortunate in this country. The First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States guarantees us freedom of religion. And I'm going to read the actual verbiage. First Amendment rights. Let's see. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Funny, on last Friday, my wife and I, we have a habit of reading our Sabbath school lesson. So on Sabbath school, you know, or Sunday school for those of you, we actually have a quarterly a book with a, you know, four a year that we get. And each day there's a lesson. So my wife, and sometimes she does hers during the day. I tend to like just do one sitting and do them all at once. It's just, it's my preference. We have other, you know, days of worship as well in the evenings, but Fridays is the day where we sit and we go through from, you know, from the first day of the week to the end of the week, go through the entire lessons, go through the Bible verses to have an understanding of kind of what that, you know, what's a week lessons are about. But last Friday, I don't know how it came up, but I was talking about freedom of religion, and she asked me, that's in the First Amendment, right? I said, absolutely. I said, as a matter of fact, I have a pocket copy of the U.S. Constitution and the amendments. I'd be happy to read them. And so in our bed, after our Sabbath school lesson, I went through and I read through each and every one of the 28 amendments that that we have, 27 amendments, pardon me, that we have. But I think, in my opinion, each amendment is so very important. The First Amendment talks about, you know, freedom of speech. Many people don't understand that. Freedom of religion. The government cannot prohibit the free exercise of religion. In my opinion, I feel that government now is prohibiting the free exercise of religion because they are making it difficult for people to exercise their faith in schools. There is a concerted effort in the public education arena to push religion out of schools and to kind of isolate it into people's homes and then remove it from people's homes. Because in many ways, I think these humanist people who are anti-religionists understand that if they push things into the home, things are not going to get done. Because religion is one of those things where you have to exercise. It's like a muscle. If you don't exercise it, you lose it. You lose, you know, your spiritual strength. And so the way to gain that spiritual strength is to go to church, is to worship at home, and even to worship at school, and to provide a venue at school, a structure where people can exercise their religion. When I was a kid, I remember I had a girl who was a Jehovah's Witness who would not recite the Pledge of Allegiance. And at first I thought it was weird that she wouldn't do it. But she explained to the teacher, and the teacher explained to the class why she wasn't doing it. And it was important for us to understand that you know, that she was not being like the rest of us, and that, you know, not that the teacher didn't like dislike her because of her faith, she chose not to swear an oath to anyone but God. I understand that now. At the time, I didn't quite understand. But even as a kid, I understood that's her religion. You know, I will respect that. Fast forward to when I was in high school. Our high school, you might say, in some ways, encouraged young people to exercise their religion. And so there were Christian groups in our school, and we were encouraged to, you know, have a spot where we could exercise our religion. Now, I understand that there are people that are Wiccans. I'm sitting kind of holding my head. It's because when I talk about religion, you know, you get these people that just want to, you know, they want to beat on drums and pray to the marshmallow god. I guess if the alternative is prohibiting the free exercise of religion in schools by not allowing any religion or allowing any religion, I would rather go with the former or with the latter than the former. I would rather, let me make sure I said that right. I would rather the school allow every religion than allow no religion. Because when you allow no religion, the people that are affected the most are those of the Abrahamic faiths, those of us that are kind of in the majority of the faiths. If the Wiccans want to have their deal somewhere, then I guess I will have to allow it. Just like if the Nazis want to demonstrate here in downtown Attleboro, I'm not going to like it. I will counter-protest peaceably, but I will allow them to protest. Will I encourage them? No. to come to Attleboro? No. But if they fill out a form and they get the permit, the parade permit, then I'm not going to stop them. Because what happens is whoever decides that they're bad and they're going to stop them, who's to say they're going to stop me when I want to have, you know, when I want to have a parade or a demonstration in Attleboro? That's the problem. And that's why this First Amendment was so beautifully written, where it says the government shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And what I admire about the Second Amendment, the same thing. The same thing. Very short and to the point. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, comma, shall not be infringed. Now, unfortunately, that short sentence has been challenged over and over again, and it's going to continue to be challenged. But when we make things simple, I think we make things good. When you complicate things, that's when the works are gummed up. And so I encourage you, my friends, my listeners, I encourage you to make New Year's resolutions that make sense for you, to decide that 2020 is going to be different, that maybe you are going to become more active in politics. Maybe you are going to vote if you've never done that. Maybe you are going to take that online class. Maybe you're going to learn how to mix the perfect cocktail, if that's what you don't want to do. You're going to learn how to bake that chicken. You're going to learn how to fix a tire. You're going to learn how to introduce yourself in a party, in a social atmosphere. You're going to learn how to memorize people's names, which actually that's one of my resolutions, which every year it doesn't come to fruition, but it's still on my list. Decide how you're going to be a better person, not a different person, because we really can't change who we are. We are, you know, kind of how God made us and kind of how God wired us. But we can improve on what we've been given. If our bodies are not that, you know, buff, we can make them buffer. Maybe you won't look like Arnold Schwarzenegger because you're not taking steroids, right? But at least you'll be, you know, thinner and stronger. You may not have the hourglass shape of Jane Mansfield, not the 90s singer, but the 1940s actress. But, you know, maybe you can work yourself so that when you put on a dress, people say, wow, you look great in that dress. You can decide to bring your family to a church. Bring them to a church. If the church you go to doesn't feel right for you, I'm not telling people to go church shopping. Find something that works for you. If the faith that you're in is not working for you, explore other churches. There are lots of alternatives. There are Baptists, there are Methodists, there are Unitarians, there are, oh my goodness, there are Catholics. Certainly, I'm not encouraging you to switch religions. I happen to be a Seventh-day Adventist, and I think that, you know, my faith has its strengths, and we have our blind spots, in my opinion, as well. But this is a religion. Religions were invented by people in order to look for God, and so that is what we must do, is to search. How that search takes you from point A to point B, that's entirely up to you. But what's important is that you're on that journey, that you do your best to be a spiritual person, to look for things above yourself. Because when you don't safeguard your rights to exercise your religion and your faith, the rights can be taken away. In China, people are fighting for the right to worship God how they see fit. And the government is doing their absolute best to take that right away, to take that desire away to look for God. We're so lucky and we're so fortunate that we don't have to fight for that. But we do have to be on guard that the privileges that we have to express ourselves, to worship as we please, to peaceably assemble, to petition the government, to have a free press. These are things that are guaranteed in the First Amendment, but if we don't know our rights, it's so easy for those rights to be taken away because no one knows about them. Same thing with religion. If you don't know about religion, you are setting yourself up to have such a void in your life. So find a place, assemble with people, join a club. Don't be alone. Always, always, always look for help. Ask for help. You're not alone. I know that there are people, young people, that listen to my show, and I will tell you, you're not alone. God loves you very much. There's only one person that is like you, that will ever be on this earth, ever, from the beginning of time to the end of time. There will only be one of you. You are unique. And the Bible says that even the hairs on your head are counted. And for someone going bald, believe me, God's got to keep track. It says, okay, that's 1,098, oh, 1,097, oh, 1,093. The numbers keep going down, but he has every hair on my head counted. And so does he with you. So I look forward to seeing you next week. Please tell your friends about America in the Now. I'm here every Tuesday from 5 to 7 p.m. May God bless you, and we will be in the fight next week. I'm going to tell you about an event on January 20th, but you're going to have to wait till next week. Take care, and God bless.